Simon Anholt, of all the people that we are speaking with for the German Dream Project, you are the only one who is a world-renowned expert in what shapes a nation's image and how countries are viewed around the world. What do you think about the idea of a new German dream?
The word dream worries me slightly because it suggests, I think, a situation which is somehow very distantly removed from the actual reality. And try as I might, when I'm thinking about how Germany's self-perception and consequently its perception by others might be improved, I don't see something that's very far away from the current reality. I see things which are very close, and only small movements are required in order to get there. So if this is a dream that we're talking about, it's not a fantastic dream. It's one of those very realistic dreams.
That's good. What is your realistic dream when it comes to Germany's image?
Well, obviously, national identity, or what we might call the brand image of Germany, is something that's terribly important. It's important for all countries, but it's somehow especially important for Germany, partly for just simple economic reasons, because Germany is a country whose economy relies so much on exports, and exports depend so much on the image of the country that produces the product. Germany's image abroad is incredibly important. It's also something that Germans worry about a great deal, I think a bit too much to be healthy. Most of the countries which have enviable images, the perfect image that we all wish we had, are the ones that don't worry about it very much. And I think there's a parallel there in human nature. The people who are absolutely relaxed about who they are tend to be the ones that other people are relaxed to be with. And if there's one piece of useless advice I'd like to give to Germany, it's simply that. It's very hard to know how to love somebody who doesn't quite know how to love himself. So the dream for Germany is really probably stemming from nothing much more than a little relaxation.
Now, how can a country or a society come to love itself, as you have just put it, without having a more inspiring dream or a promise for the future?
Well, it needs to have a clear plan. There's no question in my mind that the other quality of countries that have a very powerful and positive image is that, generally speaking, they have a clear idea of where they're going as well as where they've been. And that depends enormously on the politicians, on the government that's in power. It's a very important part of the job of any government to have a pretty clear, realistic and yet exciting vision for where the country is going, what its purpose is in the world. And again, for Germany, for all the reasons that I mentioned, that's particularly important. What's its positioning, is the word used in marketing. Where does it stand in relation to other countries? And what's it for? What is Germany for?
But if you ask, what does Germany stand for? What does it stand for in the world and towards itself? Isn't that just another way of asking the same question, which is, what is Germany's dream?
Yes, absolutely. And I think this is the core of what I wanted to talk to you about when you suggested this topic to me. Whenever I've had conversations with people in Germany about the image of the country, and there's a theme which I constantly find recurring in these conversations from the German side, not from my side, which is about the importance of letting other people know that the Germans have a soft side, a fun side. Now, the Germans have a very interesting characteristic, which they share with the Japanese, and that is that there's this very strong, almost sacred distinction between the official public version of Germany and the Germans, and the unofficial, informal, private version. And just like the Japanese, in Germany, there's a big difference between the two. The official public version of Germany and of the Germans is all to do with efficiency, effectiveness, order, competence. And everybody knows that the private, well, everybody doesn't know, you and I know, the private version of the Germans is rather different. Fun-loving, it's humorous, it's warm, it's hospitable, and all the rest of it. It's not very surprising that most of the prejudices around the world about Germans relate to this official version, which is rather severe, rather austere, rather cold, and rather unbending. So it's a perfectly understandable response to that, that people like the Goethe Institute say, well, if only people knew what we were like when we relax, when we take off our suits and ties, and when we are in our families and when we're in our homes, then they'd love us all the more. I think this is extremely unwise for several reasons. First of all, The shocking truth is that many foreigners actually prefer the public version of the Germans. It's very easy for the Germans to say, oh, but it's all so severe and it's so unlike us. But actually, it's one of the things that people like about the Germans, the fact that their products are so reliable, the fact that their systems and their structures and their bodies and agencies are so dependable and well-organized. It's something people like. And the fact that the world is becoming, with every year that passes, a more chaotic, more muddled, more unpredictable mess, these qualities become more and more valuable. The Goethe Institute worry that the Germans are perceived as being boring. Well, boring is next door to trustworthy. And trust is the one quality above all which is looking to be most valuable in the world in the 21st century. So I would really seriously, for all those and a host of other reasons, I would seriously question the wisdom of wanting to present this informal, happy-go-lucky, fun version. You're not Italians and you're not Brazilians, and you're never going to be able to persuade people that you are. You could argue, in fact, that the Italians and the Brazilians have got exactly the opposite problem, that nobody will take them seriously. And that's a far worse problem, because it means that when they do want to engage in international politics or international trade, the Brazilians particularly, they have an enormous barrier to overcome. The Germans don't. So I think things aren't nearly as bad as the Germans imagine that they are, and that the current image they've got is not very far wrong. I think it just needs to be transitioned from being austerely efficient to being reliably efficient, and from being a distantly admired trusted country to being a trusted friend. But frankly, if you were a manufacturer in Cambodia or in Guatemala, you would give absolutely anything to have the image that Germany has. Another thing that will give us a sense of proportion is to consider the gigantic leaps in terms of image that Germany has taken during the last 20 or 30 years. It's absolutely phenomenal how the image of this country has changed from being broadly negative to being broadly positive. That's virtually a miracle.
I remember you saying a couple of years ago that each country on Earth is telling itself a somewhat subconscious story about itself.
Yeah.
So what would that story be that your home country, the UK, is telling itself?
Well, the stories we tell ourselves in this country, ever since we rather carelessly lost our empire, is that we're brilliant at losing things. And the danger with this story is that it's a very seductive one, because there's something very, very secure and reassuring about defeat. It brings no responsibilities with it. And when we do actually win something, which isn't very often, we hardly know what to do about it. And if we want to change things in the United Kingdom, we have to somehow try to root out that story about us being regular and somehow glorious losers, expose that story for what it is, which is an empty fiction, and replace it with something a bit more positive, some kind of benign nationalism. At the moment, we have a strange mixed identity. We feel that we're drifting. One day, we're America's closest ally. One day, we're an ex-empire. One day, we're a modern European. And it seems to change from day to day. And I think populations can't live with that kind of uncertainty. If you ask me what the most dangerous story is in the German culture, I expect it's something along the lines of nobody understands us. That's a story which is another self-fulfilling prophecy. Because if you're convinced that you're far too complex ever to be understood by anybody else, that tends to result in not trying very hard to be understood. Because again, you can take refuge in that. There's something very comforting about being somebody that nobody else understands. It releases you from a lot of obligations and responsibilities to make yourself understood. So again, we'd need to have a little think about this, but I suspect there are three or four stories there in the German culture, and one of them is nobody understands us because we're too complicated.
Mr. Enhold, isn't it interesting to you that some of the most dynamic societal dreams in the world right now are being dreamt by developing nations?
Because they're going somewhere, you see. It's because they're on a journey. And if they're not, they should be. And they've got to pick their specialism or their positioning in the marketplace. Like India has got to pick what it's going to be. And the wealth, it's clear where the wealth is going to come from. And it's clear how India is going to count in world affairs in the future. Likewise, it's very clear for China. So they feel that they're in a train that's moving, and it's not so very difficult for them to point to the future and say that future is what defines us today. And this is why life is, in many ways, very much harder for well-established, wealthy nations like ours. But countries that have got very long pasts, like Britain and Germany, find it very much harder to look towards the future, because it's all about protecting your position and your status in the world rather than having very much to prove.
Now, isn't that sense of going somewhere exactly what so many young people are longing for and are needing in order to identify with their own country instead of leaving it by the droves, which is happening to Germany right now, where we have a quite massive brain drain every year?
Absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head. And a politician these days who really wants to lead in a country like this absolutely has to find a sense of purpose, a clear one.
Good. So what do you think could be that sense of purpose that Germany could offer to its youth?
Well, I think one thing is for sure, that in the times in which we live and the moral and ethical climate in which our younger generations fortunately live, it can't be a selfish one. It's perfectly legitimate for developing countries to have basically selfish dreams because they've had nothing and it's their turn now. So it's perfectly okay for India to have a dream that says we're going to be rich. But for countries which have been rich and continue to be rich and have enjoyed so much of the world's spoils in the past, it can't be a selfish dream, or it can't be a purely selfish dream, because that just, it looks too bad and it is too bad. So one of the things that very few developed countries, if any really, have succeeded in demonstrating is that their dream is a dream they share with others, a dream that they share with less fortunate countries. To me, Germany's dream might be conscience of the world, in terms of peacekeeping, sustainable technology, liberal politics, tolerance, green science, all the rest of it. Now, that doesn't sound very helpful. That sounds rather irritating. And perhaps I'm just expressing it badly. But if Germany succeeds, which I think it could do, in presenting itself as being the most helpful, the most sharing of the rich European nations when it comes to partnering, trading, helping, supporting, carrying along the developing nations, then that's a role which I think is perfectly legitimate for a rich country to have and to believe in and to strive towards. It's in its own interests, of course, because it's a variety of commercial imperialism at the same time. And it's also something which will appeal to the younger generations within that country and outside it. It's interesting how very few rich countries have ever succeeded, have yet succeeded, or even thought about defining themselves by means of their relationship with less fortunate countries. We in the UK have only just started to realize the potential for that. In our own public diplomacy efforts, we've only just realized that our Department for International Development is potentially a key partner in the job of representing Britain and its aims and position in the world. In other words, that we are partly defined by what we give rather than by what we do and what we take and what we earn. And I think Germany potentially has an enormous credibility in this area, and I think it's a chance that it needs to seize. And again, it cannot be a selfish dream.
I must say that given that you and I started this interview with you being somewhat cautious towards using the term dream, what you have just described right now sounds to me like a very inspiring and beautiful dream.
Well, again, you see, that's partly my cultural misreading of the situation. You see, the need to have for there to be some kind of collective popular dream is so obvious to me, but I can see that in the German culture, it's far less obvious. In fact, it's rather a radical idea.
Mr. Enholt, thank you for dreaming with us.
Thank you.